Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 45, War, Occupation and Liberation. The late 680s in Kent are another of those periods we've become quite familiar with during our studies so far, a period of upheaval following on the heels of war. In this case, the war was fought between Kent and the Gewissa between 686 and 688. It began apparently when Cadwalla invaded Kent in 686 and saw the subjection of Kent until his abdication in 688. After this date, though, Kent was further subjugated by its neighbours and did not truly regain independence until at least 692. No one alive at the time could have known it, but the period 686 to 692 was just a foretaste of the dynamics which would shape the rest of Kentish history. Why would Cadwalla invade Kent? As I've noted multiple times, Kent was historically a region which attracted wealth from the continent. Therefore, Kent, despite its relatively small size, was traditionally one of the wealthiest kingdoms of Anglo-Saxon England. This doubtless made it a tantalising prize for any king hungry for wealth, and as any look at Old English literature should make clear, any king who wanted to remain a king needed wealth to distribute among his loyal followers. Thus, raiding, conquest, and expansion were one aspect of an early English king's raison d'etre. Add to this the fact that Cadwalla rose as a warlord who happened to become king of the Gewissa, and it seems likely that he sought to take control of Kent so as to get a portion of its wealth. Cadwalla also seems to have hungered for a Gewissan overlordship south of the Thames, and this of course would require him to dominate Kent. That Cadwalla hoped to permanently bring Kent into a Gewissan sphere of influence is seen in the fact that he invaded the kingdom along with his brother Mull, and that following their victory, he established Mull as a puppet king of Kent. In this campaign, Eadric, who had only recently completed a successful coup against his uncle Hlothere, was killed. Our only evidence for Mull's reign comes from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. Here, in two terse back-to-back entries, we are told only that Cadwalla and Mull invaded in 686, and that Mull, along with 12 other men, was burned to death in a Kentish revolt in 687, at which point Cadwalla again ravaged Kent. The implication is, of course, that Cadwalla's second invasion was a punitive one in response to the Kentish revolt. What he did after this is not stated in any sources. Possibly he assumed direct rule in Kent, and possibly he set up another puppet king. We don't fully know. Whatever he did, the situation did not last long, since in 688 he abdicated the throne of Gewissa and went on pilgrimage to Rome, where he died shortly after arriving. In Gewissa, the new king Ina was keen to establish order after the expansionism of Cadwalla, and one result of this was that he returned his focus to the Gewissan heartlands and the British territory to their west, thus leaving the southeast relatively free from interference. From the Kentish power vacuum, there arose two kings, thus reviving the old custom of dual monarchy, Swafhaird and Oswina. Let us say something about these two, because their reigns and the memory of it recorded by men like Bede are a bit of a puzzle. Swafhaird, who ruled in western Kent, was the son of Sabi, king of the East Saxons. This sudden rise of a member of the East Saxon royal family in Kent suggests either further political machinations in the southeast after Cadwalla's retirement, or the survival of the imperial system he established following his 688 invasion. There is evidence that Cadwalla had worked with bishops of the East Saxons in an attempt to build churches in Sussex, possibly indicating some Gawissan overlordship in Essex, but at the very least suggesting some alliance between Essex and Gawissa. It is possible, then, that he used some East Saxon support to cow the Kentish people during the war of 686-688. Swafhaird, then, may have been a client set up by Cadwalla in 688, or possibly the East Saxons seized the opportunity of Cadwalla's abdication to take control of Western Kent, a region that had historically been settled by Saxons rather than Jutes. Either way, the implication is that even following Cadwalla's leaving the scene of English politics, Kent still was not fully independent. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say, I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
We want to tell you guys a little bit about our podcast. Tom and I met in college, became best friends, and then teachers almost 20 years ago. Sometimes school just does not allow us to elaborate on the topics that we find interesting, like the real shark attacks that inspired the movie Jaws, or the real historical context to Indiana Jones artifacts. Where does cereal come from? Or are zombies real? Does Ben Franklin really deserve to be on a $100 bill? On our podcast, just like in our class, there are no stupid questions.
Just two friends having lighthearted conversation about history, pop culture, and the context of current events.
Listen to History Teachers Talking Podcast from Evergreen Network, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is Gary Chachot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th-century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th-century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm doing here, then it really helps me when you leave a review or a rating on the podcast provider you're using to listen to this, when you subscribe to the show's YouTube channel, or when you become a supporter over on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and transcripts by pledging to one of the show's patron tiers. And speaking of patrons, I wanted to give a shout-out to Elizabeth Springer, whose novel A Council of Wolves would be of interest to listeners of this show. It's a mystery set in 9th century England, which covers a lot of the history and the politics that we've discussed here. It's a great read, and I wholeheartedly recommend it. So again, that's A Council of Wolves by Elizabeth Springer, if you're interested. But thank you, Elizabeth, so much for your support, and I hope you're enjoying the extra material that you now have access to. Anyway, back to the show. But what of Oswina? Unlike Swafhard, he was Kentish and had some claim to royal blood. However, he was not a relative of Eadredge. Rather, in a charter he issued in 690, he claimed to be a close relative of Eormenred, the eldest son of Eadbald, and thus a descendant of a different royal line from the one that had produced Kent's last few kings. This would make Oswina a relative of the Mercian royal house, and this has been used by some scholars such as D.P. Kirby to suggest that he was put on the throne of Eastern Kent by Mercian intervention. There is no hard evidence for this, though, and indeed it would seem like an odd arrangement, given that Essex under King Sebi had often been a rival of Mercia. It seems unlikely, then, that the two kingdoms would negotiate to partition Kent. Oswina, then, may represent a genuine revival of Kentish self-rule, at least in eastern Kent, but it is also possible that he was a Gawissan and then East Saxon puppet of some kind. That he was some sort of puppet can be inferred from hints of hostility to his memory found in the written sources. Specifically, Bede, when writing about the accession of Whitred to the throne of Kent in 690, claims that Whitred liberated Kent from the rule of foreign invaders. Since Oswina seems to have had some claim to the throne, this comment seems somewhat odd. There are several possibilities, though. One is that Bede's sources were somehow biased against Oswina, possibly due to doubts about his legitimacy. Bede's main source for the Kentish history recorded in his Ecclesiastical History of the English People was Albinus, abbot of the monastery of Saints Peter and Paul in Canterbury. Albinus's testimony, then, may well reflect the sentiment of the church establishment in Kent, that Oswina was illegitimate. It's a bit unclear exactly how Oswina was descended from Eormenred, and this leaves open the possibility that Oswina was a pretender or was suspected of being so. Whitred, on the other hand, was the son of Egbert, so he was the nephew of Hlothere and the brother of Eadrich. He was unquestionably then part of the now dominant royal line. The hostility to Oswina doesn't need to have been based on any genuine evidence that he was an illegitimate king. His merely being part of a different branch of the royal line may have been enough to inspire hostility, since the line of Eorkenbert had by 688 been able to build up alliances with the nobility and the ecclesiastical hierarchy. These alliances would not appreciate a new king who may not favour them in the way that his predecessors had. It's also worth considering who the foreign invaders that Bede referred to were, since it seems very likely that they were the East Saxons. If the East Saxons had helped Caedwalla conquer and maintain control of Kent, and if Oswina ruled thanks to East Saxon support, then it's likely that some of the Kentish nobility saw him as a puppet. Remember, Eadrich didn't rule for that long before he was killed by Caedwalla, so we don't actually know how much popular support his South Saxon-backed coup would have had. Oswina, though, may suggest that the nobility of Kent would not take kindly to a king who was openly in collaboration with foreigners. When Whitred succeeded in 690, he initially ruled in partnership with Swafhard, as is attested by a record of the election of Beotwald as Archbishop of Canterbury in 692, which refers to both Whitred and Swafhard as kings of Kent. Thus, even though Whitred retrospectively had this reputation of being the king who forced out the foreign invaders, he didn't do so immediately. However, Swafhard is never heard of again after 692, and this suggests that from some point between 692 and the issuing of Whitred's first charter in 694, in which he is the only king, Swafhard died or was expelled, at which point Whitred became sole king of Kent. Whitred could thus be said, in retrospect, to have expelled the invaders from Kent. With the rise of Whitred to the sole kingship of Kent, the dark period of 686 to 692 was over. But with the benefit of hindsight, we know now that it was merely the final extended period of Kentish independence before the Mercian hegemony turned its eyes south to claim access to the port of London. Under Whitred, though, Kent would experience something of a resurgence, which would establish him as a king second in prestige only to Athelbert. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you will join me again next time.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.